Hello, world. Welcome to another fantastic edition of Cybersecurity Matters. I'm your enigma of a host, Dominic Vogel, and joining me, as always, is my partner in crime, Mr. Christian Redshaw. Christian, who do we have coming in to chat with us today?
Well, today, Dominic, we have Mary Marwig and Aaron Walker. They are analysts at G2, and I look forward to bringing them on to talk about cybersecurity and privacy.
They're both coming to us live from the Windy City, so we're looking forward to that convo. We'll welcome them on board, and we'll be back momentarily to chat with both Mary and Aaron.
Mary and Aaron, welcome to Cybersecurity Matters. It's good to meet you guys, and it's great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Likewise.
Really nice to meet you guys, too.
Awesome. So out of the gate, we want to give some background on the organization that you guys represent, which is G2, which is a technology marketplace. What is G2?
Yeah, G2 is a lot of things. It's first a platform for software reviews, where we kind of collect a ton of data and then eventually turn it into reports that are similar to like a Gartner Forrester-esque analyst report without the pay-to-play factor. It's just purely based on market details and then the satisfaction from user reviews.
So it's unbiased.
Yeah, that's one of the big goals our founders tried to keep in mind in just trying to bring transparency to software acquisition for all business sizes, really.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so we have a lot of tools. Sure, and I really want to reiterate the user experience. So G2 is a place where you go to get peer insights and peer reviews. So a lot of our traditional market research analyst firms, it's about the analyst perspective. But what G2 tries to do is get the voice of the actual users of the software. And so our grids, we have grid reports that are free. Those are 100% based on the actual users. So while Aaron and I love our jobs, we can't influence how companies end up on those grids. So that's a great thing, though. I definitely believe in this like trust economy, and that's what we're going for. So I highly recommend to the people who are viewing your podcast to check it out if they're in the market to buy. It's always good to do your research. We have compare reports. So if you've narrowed it down to your like last few and you want to stack them up side by side to get that actual user review feedback, please check that out. All of our reports are free. We do them quarterly. We also have a momentum score as well. So for like smaller companies, these entrepreneurial ones that aren't, they don't have the huge market presence yet, they can still, if they have excellent technology and their customers love them, they can also show growth as well. So if you're in the market, check us out.
For sure.
Aaron and I, we focus on security and privacy, but we have everything. We have marketing. We have very specialty software like hospitality, aviation. I mean, you name it, we have it. Wow. But you're talking to the right people if you're talking about cybersecurity.
That's awesome. That's perfect. Well, let's get into cybersecurity. I forgot to say, this is our first episode where we actually have two guests on at one time. So as I look at the monitor, there, it's like the Brady Bunch with the four of us here. It's it's a super cool experience. And you know, if we want to sing a song at the end, like a multi-part harmony thing, we definitely could work that into this episode here.
Aaron looks like he's got a good
voice.
I bet he can sing.
I don't know about that.
Oh my gosh. You guys just, go first.
Just let us know.
Karaoke.
So I'm going to start with a kind of a quintessential question on the show, which is, and I'll direct it to Aaron first. Aaron, why does cybersecurity matter?
Yeah. So typically, while the way I try to approach the value of cybersecurity is from that business perspective, because most people are using us as a resource to improve their cybersecurity. But most frequently people are coming because they didn't think security first, mostly. Mm-hmm. And then they have to realize that, oh, I have all of this information that I need to protect. Oh, my company's growing and I need to make sure that all of their laptops and our servers are functional and secure, and so we don't get fined. And then building trust is also kind of the next step out of that. First and foremost, it really is just actually protecting people's information, and then also avoiding fines, and then yeah, there's a lot of reasons cybersecurity matters, I guess.
A lot of components, but I think you hit the main ones there.
Yeah.
We like to say that security and privacy are almost two sides of the same coin. And, you know, privacy comes from the rights of the individual users who the information belongs to. So, so Mary, for you, why does privacy matter? Why is privacy important?
Yeah, well, I have to say, I feel like the luckiest person ever to be able to do my job, because I sit between what I'm really passionate about is consumer privacy. So the end user, you know, this is real people's data. Data represents actual human people, you know, yourself, your neighbor, your friends, your family. And we want to protect that. So I'm in a unique position to help companies that have held that data make sure they do right by customer or consumers moving forward. Mm. So what's really awesome for me is now we have a bunch of laws on our side to protect consumers. And you know what? Those laws are actually great for businesses too, because the more you improve your security and privacy posture, the actually more trustworthy as a company you can become. Mm-hmm. And then you also reduce your risk for breaches, which, you know, can cost in the millions of dollars. Not only that, but reputational damage. Mm-hmm. So I like to always remember the people behind those data points.
Yes.
And that's why privacy matters. And I mean, I couldn't be at a better time. Like, I'm sure you heard the California Consumer Privacy Act went into effect just this month. So it went into law in January, but it's enforceable as of July. So, I mean, we're 30 days in. So this is a really hot category. I do want to say, to your point about privacy and security being on the same coin, it's true that there's similarities, but there's also differences, and there are other sides of that coin. So I would call it more of like a die, like a dice.
Maybe a cube.
One dice. Yeah, a cube. Thank you. One dice. Oh my gosh. so it's less like a coin, more like a die and or a cube. And I would say those other players would be like legal or compliance. And then a lot of folks forget about marketing, because they're the consumers of that data. They're the ones who use it. So they're also part of that ecosystem of building a trust network.
I'd probably throw developers in there too. Just
lot of, well, them too.
Even or coming up now, there's a lot more development security hybrid roles and like DevSecOps, but actually securing the code from the start is becoming more and more important, at least I think so. Mm-hmm.
Security by design, it sounds like what you're talking about.
Definitely.
Yeah, privacy by design.
Mm-hmm. And I'll ask this to both you. I mean, in terms of longer term trends in terms of you know, security tools and platforms, and then also on the privacy side, in terms of investment, I know COVID may have thrown a wrench in all this, but are you seeing organizations increasing their spend when it comes to the security capabilities and or privacy capabilities? Maybe we'll start with Aaron.
Yeah, we are. Probably not enough, but we are. I ran a survey in March, like right after people kind of were mandated to work from home. And there were increases in pretty much all of the technologies, but not to the pool of users with unprotected endpoints and other insecure technologies got significantly bigger, but the number of users using the total spend probably went up maybe 5%, but the number of remote workers doubled. So companies are spending a lot more, but probably not enough.
And do you foresee COVID having a lasting impact in terms of either suppressing that spend or maybe even increasing it in terms of remote work?
100%. I don't see any possibility for that going down with so many companies saying you can work from home as long as you need to feel comfortable or just want to in general. And all of that requires significantly more security because you're now operating on hundreds of different networks, potentially thousands, on countless endpoints. So companies have to increase spend if they want to secure all these remote workers.
Gotcha. And Before I swing it back to Mary, I noticed the Pikachu in the background there, Aaron. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Sincerely appreciated.
Yeah. Mary, your thoughts in terms of again, privacy spend and what you're seeing in terms of long-term trend.
Oh, sure. And, you know, we do have some data as well on like cybersecurity stuff that I'd like to mention. Our traffic right now, our top performing page for cybersecurity is still multi-factor authentication, single sign-on, VPN. Yep. So those are still technologies that while they're not like the latest and hottest areas, they're still not 100% adopted. So like in that survey that Aaron conducted back in March, one of the points that we found out just blew my mind, which was 1 in 4 remote workers had no MFA of any kind on their business apps, nothing. So that's like pretty staggering. So there's still a lot of basics that need to be done. And we've got some new technologies in the multi-factor authentication world as well. Like for example, one of the ones that I like the most is risk-based authentication that takes into like contextual factors, like where you are in the world, what the reliability of the network that you're on, like even your device posture. As you can tell, I'm holding a phone horizontally right now because my internet is terrible and I had to hop on my phone. So it would be contextually aware. We also, just this year, I put together a new category called passwordless authentication, which takes away passwords as a form of authentication and relies on others like items that you have, like a hardware or a software token, or even a biometric in addition to risk-based authentication measures. So there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of the basics. So we are seeing investments in those still. But to your privacy question, absolutely. Basically right now, at least in the United States, there hasn't been any lawsuits yet to really determine like what laws, like what actually applies, you know? So people are still scrambling. The technology is also scrambling. Just even in the last, let's see, eight months, when I created the privacy categories on G2, there has been enormous functionality improvements. For example, a lot of software that had its origins from a legal standpoint, not a security standpoint, still used workflow and basically like spreadsheet technology, if you can call that technology, right? And now there's been a ton of money flowing into automated data discovery, sensitive data discovery. And that's really what's driving a lot of privacy-related work. So whether that's consent management, because again, this all relates to people, actual human beings and their preferences and what they allow and consent to. So yeah, there's been humongous investments. I will say like, the amount of investment money flowing into these companies is staggering. Like there's a company that has the largest market presence in the privacy world has, I think it's over a $4 billion valuation and it's only 4 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually think the shirt that I'm wearing right now is older than 4 years. So like, you know, had I made different decisions with my money, didn't buy this shirt and instead bought some data privacy software, maybe things would be different.
What
for
were
me.
You doing 4 years ago? Yeah. That's the question.
I know. Making mistakes by not investing, right? Yeah. So no.
There's a
point. But it's excellent.
The point that you brought up there that I just wanted to discuss a bit more. So you mentioned about some of the basics, some of the foundational stuff that still isn't being done, like multi-factor authentication. And obviously, I want to get your thought on this first, and Aaron, if you have anything else to add to it. But why do you feel there's still that staggering number, like you're saying there, 25% haven't adopted multi-factor authentication? Again, MFA has been around for quite a few years now. Why do you feel there's still that staggering number? And is this still something that's going to take another 10 years before we get to to significantly smaller or higher numbers in terms of adoption?
Who wants to go first?
Sorry, Mary first.
Oh, you asked me. Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry. Okay. So it's funny you mentioned this. Like yesterday or 2 days ago, I had a call with a vendor and they are, really in the secure email gateway category, which is really old school, but people are still visiting it. It's actually outperforming. Secure Email Gateway, our category, is outperforming cloud email security.
Jeez.
Really?
Wow.
I was shocked when I saw that. I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, I think that the adoption of this tech, you know, when it first comes out, like, at least I get really excited. I'm like, great, we can all move to this. But is that reality? No. There's budgets. You know, you got to plan for this stuff way in advance. And, you know, there's also interoperability. There's executive buy-in as well. You know, people may not understand how important some of these smaller things like MFA are until they get breached, right? I think the optimistic part of me is like, yeah, let's get this great new tech and let's build it from the ground up in the most secure way. But the reality is people are hamstringing stuff together and have limited budgets and resources. So can you blame them? Absolutely not. And so we're here for both of those constituencies. You know, whether you are still not in like the digital, what do people call that? The digital transformation.
Yeah.
If you haven't done that yet. And you're just getting started. G2 is there for you. We've got all of that. But also if you're interested in the latest and the hottest, newest thing on the block, like that's what Aaron and I love to deal with, but we deal with both.
Gotcha. Aaron, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. A lot of companies I've seen that have like their security spend housed in their IT budget are typically people who are more reactive. Security wise. Mm-hmm. And then that is also just an issue in itself, is not really adopting security technologies until something goes wrong in response to that. But what was the original question, actually?
Just about the foundational stuff, like multi-factor authentication.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why is that not more prevalent?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably three things in my mind that I could think of. Just misallocated security investment internally within companies. And then there's another factor that I think is just kind of people don't necessarily know exactly what they need for a well-rounded security stack, I guess.
Sure.
So they just kind of buy the things that they have heard of, like a VPN or a MFA. So they'll start off with those things. And then obviously your enterprise companies will have full stacks departments, a CISO, chief security officer, all these things. But a lot of the smaller companies, which employ a lot of people, are not really pressured in the same way, even though the data that they have stored is just as valuable as that of some giant company. I don't think they face the same internal and external pressure from either side, really.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll also throw in user adoption too, because that, you know, if you have stuff that's really cumbersome for your staff to do, they're going to find workarounds. Like shadow IT isn't a thing because people could go through the normal way of getting what they wanted, right? Or people who just use their own endpoints, or maybe they'll just download the data because they're tired of going through like a slow method, right? And now you've got all this sensitive data on someone's laptop. So whatever technology someone adopts, they also have to make the investments in making sure that their end users know how to use it properly and that it's geared for them as well.
Yeah,
now you guys are obviously in the technology space and that's your business. But also, if you're a believer in good cybersecurity and good privacy practice as well, and you're kind of touching on this, how important is it to have those people components in place where you have the awareness and training, security and privacy training, and then good policies in place so that you can have good, effective adoption of such concepts as MFA and the other technologies that you're providing?
Yeah, I think that's very important. There's a ton of ways that I think kind of previously, a lot of security awareness training tools have been lacking in like specificity and the way they're actually presented to employees. A lot of the time you'll get like a video and then a quiz or something, and then don't really read anything and you check it off and you don't think about it again. But there's a lot of cool security awareness training that try to build that security centric culture to where they integrate with your business applications and then kind of present you with more relevant security tips. Or if they see you doing something that's potentially risky, they'll prompt you to be like, are you sure you want to do this? Do you know what you're actually doing? And those, I think, are going to help people actually retain and develop those skills and keep security in their minds. There's even a newer category that I, or market, that I've built recently that's specifically for developers, security awareness training, like secure code training. Mm-hmm. So if they're inputting something with a security bug in it, it'll ship it back out, inform them, and then give them a little module, a training module to hopefully prevent them from doing that in the future. So I hope more technologies like that continue to come out.
Interesting.
I'm smiling because Aaron and I kind of got into this a few months back where I was like, no, just design the systems like to avoid people, just like, forget them. Like they're never going to get this right. He's like, give them a chance, you know, put them through the security training. I'm like, oh, like a video, just watching a video and then taking a test by guessing that A, B, C, or D is not going to get you where you need to go. Right. And so I was previously of that camp, but then actually Aaron was able to convince me that investing in training your employees is valuable. And then one of the reasons why I would say that that has changed my mind is the prevalence of social engineering attacks. Mm-hmm. You know, like preying on people's willingness to do the right thing, what they think is the right thing, or just that Midwestern kindness of holding a door open for someone, you know, and just making sure that people are aware of the ways that they can be, I guess, influenced to do an action that's not in their best interest or your company's best interest is valuable. So he helped me kind of come around on that circle. So thank you, Aaron.
So you've seen the light, yeah. Mary.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Well, that's a great note to end on because we are out of time for this episode. Thank you both so much for sharing your wisdom and insight with us. And I wish we had time for a song, but unfortunately, that's going to have to be it. So thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, everybody.
Nice to meet both of you.
Nice to meet you, too.
That was a really interesting conversation. I mean, first off, we had two guests at the same time. I don't think we've ever done that before. And I love your reference to the Brady Bunch. It's been a long time since I've heard that used as a cultural reference. So job well done on that one there. But what a really, really interesting conversation, you know, and I think it's fantastic to have a company like G2 that's able to provide peer-reviewed items in terms of different security and privacy software. I mean, I know they mentioned they do other things as well, but I think that's so, so cool because that strips away a lot of the bias and makes it much easier to make a purchasing decision.
You know, Dominic, I completely agree. And something that really stood out to me was an analogy that Mary used about the cube. Mm-hmm. So I was saying it, security and privacy are two sides of the same coin, but there are so many more dimensions that she so eloquently pointed out. There's the legal, the marketing, and then Aaron talking about the software development as well.
Yes.
So cybersecurity, privacy, and all those different elements are such a wonderful blend as part of that overall dice or cube.
It was just so interesting to be able to get that type of insight and that type of analysis from people who analyzed all these different platforms and software in the space. So I think that was just a fantastic conversation. And again, very different experience to have two guests at once. So be interesting to see if we try that experiment again.
But, next time we'll make room to sing the song.
That's right. But as always, we always appreciate every one of you tuning in to Cybersecurity Matters. It was another fantastic episode. Please do check out the Conversations That Matter YouTube page. Check out previous episodes. Check out other podcasts in the family umbrella. But until next time, be well, be safe, and we'll catch you next Wednesday on Cybersecurity Matters.